you, Gabrielle, and thank you all. My name is Isa, and I am an alcoholic. And this is a privilege and an honor to be here and share with you some of my experiences. This is amazing. So I came in early because my home group is Living Now, and we have 14 meetings a week, and all of you are invited to come. However, the Saturday and Sunday meetings are huge. We have 200 people, and the people come 2 hours before the meeting starts to get a seat. And so I thought this was the same thing here, so I came early and there was nobody. Anyway, this is kind of weird for me to stand in because I hardly can look over, but I try, and so perhaps you can. Thank you so much. So I'm an alcoholic who has a sponsor who also has a sponsor. And yeah, this is important. And I have sponsees, and with my sponsees I do the steps and the traditions and the concepts. And it's only by the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I stand here before you today sober. My sobriety date is not the 9th of August. I came in the 9th of August, 1978. And I drank every single day at the end of my drinking and blacked out. And I was also addicted to prescribed tranquilizers, Libium and Valium at that time. And I was also addicted to cocaine. And I know that this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's part of me. And I see what happened because after the 9th of August, the first week in AA, I did cocaine twice. It's not recommended. So I date my sobriety date the 16th of August, 1978, which means that the 16th of August I celebrated 38 years of continuous sobriety. And it's actually only one day at a time, which lasted 38 years. That's how we do it in Alcoholics Anonymous. So Gabrielle mentioned to me to not forget to let you know how we do it in Manhattan or everywhere. And I've got this, you know, everything I know actually is from what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we had a very wonderful member, Phil P., who recently was deceased, and his book is in one of the big books, The Minister's Son. And he taught me to keep sobriety in one hand and the rest of my life here. And so whatever happens in my life really has nothing to do with my sobriety. So another thing I learned was that I do not take myself too seriously, but I take my sobriety extremely seriously. So that said, so did I tell you that you are invited to come and visit my group, Living Now? They'd love to see you. We're very nice to people who come to visit us and to newcomers. And in my whole length of sobriety, I've only have had three sponsors. One was a gay black male who, after 6 months, told me seriously, "Hey, Isa," he says, "my sponsor tells me to tell you that it is detrimental to my sobriety, I do not sponsor you any longer." That's how crazy I was. But in the meantime, he had introduced me to a woman called Sylvia, who then had become my sponsor, and she is theoretically still my sponsor for over 30 years, but she is now she has dementia. And so now I'm onto my third sponsor for 7 or 8 years or whatever. And she has known me from the beginning of my sobriety, and her name is Susan, and she always was working at the General Service Office, and you know her case, yeah, and Gabrielle knows her, and she still works there. And just recently, what was it? Last week, Friday, I went to the General Service Office to meet up with my sponsor and to have lunch with her and attend the meeting that they have Friday at 11 a.m. So if ever you're there, come and visit your office, at your office. You know, so Susan and I also have still daily contact via either email or text or call. And these were the tools that were given to me when I came first in the program, and I still do that. So I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. Some of you who know my story, you just have to suffer through it, you know, so because it hasn't changed very much, obviously. So what was it like? What got me in the program, and what is it like now? So I am sober. First of all, I really wanted to thank the committee and all of you for being here and for having me, you know. And I wanted to share with you how impressed I am with the whole setup of this conference. I love this the theme and the steps and everything that was done for us. Somebody did that for us, you know. So I'm totally grateful. I'm grateful for. I once went to a. I will be going back and forth, so forgive me if I don't do things chronologically. But I was once at a conference, twice actually, at in North Carolina, at the Cherokee, in the town called Cherokee, and it was a Native American Cherokee clan that was holding this. And in the morning, they had the morning sunrise meeting, and there was a Native American shaman, and he would hold the meeting, and he would look in the morning at every one of us. It was in a big circle, maybe 150 people, and he would say, "I thank my higher power, my Father in the sky, for keeping me sober today." And then he'd say also, while he would look at each one of us, "And I thank my higher power that I can fall in love with each one of you every single day." And that so touched me, that you can fall in love with the person that you are with each other every single day, just like so bright. It was so beautiful, totally moved me. So this morning I went to the meditation meeting, and the same thing kind of overcame me, you know. As soon as I walked into the chapel, there was just something that so touched me that I thought, oh my God, there is a God whom I do not understand. And so I also want to tell you that this is only my story. This is only my experience. You know, so that I can share with you, because that's the only thing I have, my story to share with you. So I am from a family. I was born in Indonesia. I'm actually a little old lady. I was born in 1941. So that makes me, I got this birthday just with this Tuesday, on the day of my anniversary, as I was flying between the U.S. and here, I'm in the middle of the air, and I become 75 years. This is what it looks like for us. 3/4 of a century. Can you imagine? So anyway, I'm born in Indonesia, and because of that date, I'm one of 10, and there is a part in my story which actually has nothing to do with my drinking, but it's important for me to share it with you because it has made me the woman that I am today. So my father was a spiritual healer, and he also was a high government official. He was a mediator between governments, and he was an honest-to-goodness prince of the court of Solo. You might have been there. And my mother was a teacher. She was brought up by Jesuits, and she spoke 7 languages. And so the Second World War came. My father became a prisoner of war, and the second atomic bomb fell, and he was underground, and thank God he survived. My mother, with the boys under 12 and the girls, we were in a concentration camp for women. And boys over 12 years old were in concentration camp for men, and we were stayed there for 3.5 years until the Allies came and we were liberated. So I share this with you because it really has nothing to do with how I became an alcoholic. It is just part of who I am. And also it can bring me to the fact that I can tell you a little bit about my parents. I have a great regard for women, women in AA, but I think in women in general because of my mother. My mother was just a fantastic woman. She taught me to read and write by writing in the sand with a stick, because of course there was no paper and whatnot. And she also gave me a purpose while in the camp. I would look around, and now we see a lot of war and whatnot, and that was part of my thing, so you know how horrible that can be. And I wanted to protect the women and the children. And so she allowed me to be dressed like the soldiers, very short hair, and having shorts, and then somebody fashioned a rifle, which I then would put over me, and I was very proud, and I would patrol the camps. In my mind, I was saving the women and the children. It gave me purpose. Just like when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys gave me purpose. I can help the newcomer, exactly the same. You know that I have purpose. And so the war ended, and we went to the Netherlands. And it was very hard for us because we came in 1950. In 1950, many of you still were reeling from the war, and you had not expected us to come here and I look different than you. And everybody was as tall as the way I remember it, very tall and blue eyes. And it was for the first time that I experienced prejudice, and I was so surprised because you didn't know who we were. And my parents, and here is really where my story begins to take shape. My parents were not religious per se, but they were very spiritual. They never ever wanted me to complain about the horrors that we had experienced. They said, if you have resentments, you have to pray for them. Doesn't that sound a lot like what I learned back in AA? If you have resentment towards somebody, you pray for them. You turn the other cheek. Well, I didn't want to buy that. So I was very angry with my family, and just rejected them from when I was very little. But my attitudes were already so horrific, really, and I don't like to listen to rules and regs, and want to know from danger. So when we were still living, this gives you an indication as to who I really am. As a little kid, we lived on a hill, and we were not supposed to play with the village kids, but I did anyway during 2 and 4, and everybody was asleep, and I would go down the hill and I would go to the village, and they had a big river that we were absolutely forbidden to swim in or play in because there were these big crocodiles. So I, as a little kid, thinking I was still this boy, maybe, I don't know, but I thought, okay, I am very fast when the sun is shining and they are lying on the river banks, I can wake them up, and then when they come after me, I run away, you know, and so that was who I was. Can you imagine? And that's the way I drank. Looking for danger. I really, really did. I love to live on the edge. So anyway, we have a limited amount of time, so I'm just going to tell you the way I drank. I drank because it was a day like today. Beautiful day, right? Good day for drinking. A rainy day, great day for drinking. Weekends, holidays, great day for drinking. So it made no difference. You know, so in my story, so I stayed here. I worked for a while at the European Common Market as a translator. I thought Europe was too small. I went to the States. I had a brother who lived there. I liked it. They offered me a job in Washington, D.C. I liked that. And then I liked America because they drank the way I drank. Because my family, they don't drink. So there's some Americans here, so they probably know how the system went. But I was fired from that job, maybe because I was drinking too much. I don't know. But I was fired from that job. And so my visa ran out, and they said, you have to leave. And at that time, you know how alcoholics are smart. So I was already hanging out with fast drinkers and also probably like lobbyists and some crooked lawyers and stuff. And I said, look, I have to leave within like a month or so. They said, honey, don't worry. We know a congressman and he will put a private bill for you in Congress. I said, okay. So the next day, a congressman did call me. Private bill comes there for Louise, which is my real name. And I could stay in the States, and then later on that congressman ended in jail. That's what happens. So, you know, I think God wanted me he has a plan. He has a plan for me, which I didn't know that. So then one day I look, so I drank with these guys, and I drank so much, I blacked out. You know, one day I look in the mirror, and I see this young woman that I hardly recognized. I who liked art, who painted, wrote poetry, and I look in the mirror, I see this slut, if you know the word. And I kind of didn't like that woman, so I said, okay, I better do something. I look around, and many women in AA have done this, and next to me is this southern white psychoanalyst, a little virgin at 30-some years old. So I seduced the poor guy. He never knew what hit him. And all my drinking friends said, Lisa, you'll be so bored out of your skull. And I said, no, this is what I need to do because I wanted to please my parents. You know how we do that? So I got married and I was indeed bored out of my skull, but my parents were kind of like pleased that, you know, I was okay, they thought. They never knew I was drinking, and then one day I look at my husband and I said, Jim, I don't think I can go on like this. He said, what do you mean? Don't you think we should talk about this? This is what shrinks do, you know. Don't you think we should talk about this? And I said, no, thank you. So I was not drinking while I was being married. I really wanted to be a good doctor's wife. You know, but if you are an alcoholic and you do not drink, there's this huge hole in yours, and you don't know what to do. And so I walked out of that marriage with only the clothes on my back. We lived on Capitol Hill in a little townhouse, never came back. Picked up a drink again at the Hog and Duff, it's probably still there. And that night I went home with two women because they promised me they had a full bottle of scotch at home. And I immediately passed out. So after 7 days, so 7 years not drinking, I pick up again and I really pick up where I left off. And I went home with these two women because they had a bottle. That's really alcoholism. Now, if these women slept with me, it would be a different story, but it wasn't. You know, I was drunk underneath that kitchen table. And from then on, it went downhill very fast. Within a year and a half, I was hanging out with drug dealers and whatnot, and just, you know, told you I like to live dangerously. And then I met this woman, because I met her son or something, and she introduced me to these women and men, and they told me these horror stories, and they were laughing and joking, and they invited me to come to their meetings, and I said, what for? Then she said, she was going to speak, and I said, I know what you're going to tell me. And actually she was in AA 10 years. And they were all qualifying, all these AA people that talk to me, but you know, when you're not ready, in one out the other. And then one day, I woke up. You know, when I drink, I pass out and stuff. So in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock, I woke up and then I called Alcoholics Anonymous, because the seed was planted. You know, and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And at that time, they didn't have 24-hour people answering the phones. There was just an answering machine. And they said, if you think you have a problem with alcohol, leave your phone number and we'll call you back. True enough, 10 o'clock in the morning, somebody calls me back. They tell me from Alcoholics Anonymous, and do I have a problem with alcohol? Well, let me tell you, I'm an early morning drinker. 10 o'clock in the morning, I've had a few, I have no problem. And so I said, no, thank you very much. very much, but I really have no problem. They said, okay, if you feel you have, come call us again. I tried to stop drinking all by myself. Was unable to do so. And then I finally, 4 days, you know, I tried half an hour and then I have to start drinking. Once I start, I cannot stop. And so I called Alcoholics Anonymous for the second time, 7:15 on a Wednesday, the 9th of August, 1978, and it was very hot. You know, it gets hot in the, where I live in New York City, like 35, 40 degrees. I don't believe in showers. I believe in perfume, lots of perfume. But they sent me to my first meeting, hot, I'm stinking. And this is the way how I lived. I was, you know, I was addicted to, remember, I was addicted to alcohol and cocaine and tranquilizers, and we don't eat. So I'm very slender, and I thought I was beautiful, like slender. I was like 50 pounds probably, or 50 kilos, you say, 100 pounds, under 100 pounds. And I have these 6-inch heels, like Tatiana wears them. So she can walk on them, I cannot, I could not. And at that time in 1978, it was also the fashion, it's now back in the fashion, that you wear these short shorts with your butt hanging out. And then I had this blouse on, diaphanous, look through. And as if that wasn't enough, no bra. I'm from that generation, no bra. At 37, my bra, my, you know, at 37, I still was like this. And then, of course, I had, the blouse was not enough that it was looped through. It had to have all the buttons unbuttoned to my belly button. And I always thought I was too short, so the high heels didn't help, but they had these false pieces of hair. Yeah, and I believed in these long eyelash hairs, and lots of makeup, and talons, long fingernails, red. And I taught it like that into my first AA meeting. I wonder what they were thinking. So I walk in and they look me up and down and they said, honey, are you new? And so I asked, what do you mean? He said, well, when did you have your last drink? And I was very proud. This morning. So they said, oh, you come with us, you are new. And they sent me right where Nick is sitting. And in between there went these two guys, and actually they were all guys, and they said, okay, you just sit there and shut up. Well, and here comes the dirt. You know, every AA story has the dirt. Now comes the dirt, and I'm going to tell you, the dirt, this is how I had sunk to. At the end of my drinking, I was seeing a shrink, not my husband, my friend of his, a colleague of his. And my shrink loved me because he loved my real, actual war story. He said, of course, you have troubles because of X, Y, and Z. You have to see me twice a week first. He's a neo-Freudian, but I'll lay on the couch. And it got so interesting for him. You have to see me 3 times a week. And then it was 5 times a week. And I had to pay for it out of pocket, which is a lot of money. So what is a girl to do when she has to pay her shrink a lot of money and she doesn't get didn't get any alimony from her husband? So I decided, well, I'm a really smart girl. I'm not going to sell myself, not prostitute myself. No. I come from a good home. I'm not doing that. But I need the money. So instead, this is 1978 now, folks, and a lot of things were still under the radar. I decided to become a dominatrix. Whoa! So remember, this is anonymity. I can tell you this because, you know, I nobody can blackmail it. I didn't talk about this in my first 6-7 years in sobriety. I was so utterly ashamed, you know. But then my first sponsor, Jervis, who fired me, he knew all of that. And he said, you got to tell whatever really happened to you. So anyway, the dominatrix is a woman who gets paid a lot of money by men who like you to do unspeakable things to them, like, you know, what? And they pay you tons and tons of money so I could pay my shrink. And so the problem was solved. And so you know, this is what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. You cannot do the things that you did before. They tell you stop drinking, but they don't tell you right away. You have to change your entire life. So I had to do that, and I did. And so I went to my very first meeting, and they were gay men. And they gave me a booklet, and at that time there was three small pages, 1978, and these men were wonderful. They gave me their telephone numbers, and they said, they marked a meeting for each day of the week. And they said, if you feel like drinking, call one of us, go to one of these meetings and you see one of us. There were maybe like 30, 40 men in there. And so I was so totally crazy, I would religiously go with my little book to these meetings that they had marked, and sure enough, they were there. And so for 2 months in AA, I thought Alcoholics Anonymous are meetings of gay men. And it's not, as you know, but my sponsors, Jervis, really loved me back to life. You know, he was a big union organizer for a now defunct airline, but I could call him morning, noon, and night. He would come out of important meetings and he would talk to me, and he would say, just don't drink and go to meetings, don't drink and go to meetings and stay for coffee, and 90 days sober. He put me into service, and I answered the phones for the next 3 years, and I've been in service since, you know, and even today I go to 4 or 5 meetings a week. It works best for me. And I meet with my sponsees one-on-one, and as I mentioned to you, at the steps of traditional concept. And so I did everything that was required of me. And then, you know, every morning, this is what I do. I do the first step perfectly. You know, ask God to keep me sober for this day. And then I realize that there's an unmanageable part in my life. And then how I do the second step is I email Susan, I email my sponsee or call them, and then one other person. All tools I learned earlier. And then I walk my dog, and I, as I'm cleaning up after her, you know, like, this is how I find my higher power. And I look at nature, and I say hello to people who are walking the dogs, and then I feel a little centered. And then this third step, I have to turn my will and my life over to the God of my non-understanding sometimes. And so I give my will and my life over, and then I'll take it back in the course of the day. That's how it works. And the fourth and the fifth, something happened to me when I was 4.5 years sober. I was dating a boy who wanted me to go on campus, this wonderful guy, John, who was 8 years longer sober than I was. Comes in May. I don't know when it was exactly, but it was, I was 4.5 years sober, and it was just before Christmas, and if you're Roman Catholic, you know there is, or Christmas, before Easter, there is something called Holy Thursday, and I was very active in the church. I was not Roman Catholic at that time, and the priest had asked 12 people in my neighborhood who were very active in the community if they wanted to participate in a ritual where the priest who would signify Christ or Jesus would wash our feet. And because this was the first time that AA was at this particular church, he asked if I wanted to be one of those people, and I said, why, of course. That I would. It was a great honor to have your feet washed for that ritual. So I didn't know I was actually going through that something was going on with me. I just didn't know it, you know. I just, because I had done what was required of me. I didn't drink and go to meetings. I sponsored. I have a sponsor, and I've done the steps and I do service. But something was happening, and I didn't know. You know how God just makes things happen. So here I was in the church. The priest was washing my feet. Suddenly, oh my God, all the tears came over me, and something happened, and it really, really felt that a weight was lifted off me and that God had forgiven me, which was something I could not do at that time. I didn't realize how big an issue it was for me. But that was for me the spiritual awakening, which I didn't know at that time that that was what is happening. I said, oh, it is maybe I'm emotional because he's doing this. After the ceremony was over, I still cried. I could not stop. I could not eat. And John, my then boyfriend, he stayed with me for 3 days and three nights, and I started to hallucinate. At least I thought it was hallucination. You know, when I was a child, I could always see spirits, angels. And I started to see them again, and they started to talk to me, and he started to get a little scared. And he said, he said, I better take you to the priest. So he took me to the church. The priest sat me down, and he described what was happening with me, and I started to tell him, who was all around, you know, all his deceased relatives. The priest just shakes his head and says, maybe she should go to the hospital. So they both decided she should go to the hospital. So if you have been in a loony bin or in a locked ward, because when you're drinking, it's a different story than when you're sober and they ask you to go, you know. So I went in there because I knew that was probably the best thing. I said, but whatever you do, do not give me any medication, because I had been off any medication for all the time that I've been sober. And so they didn't give me any medication, but they put me in a locked ward. 10 days I stayed. And during that time, I was still doing a lot of translations for the General Service Office. They came every single day. My sponsor came, my shrink came, all of those people came, and I was just like, you know, I started, began eating again, and then I realized, and I took the big book with me in the hospital, and I was reading how it works by heart. I know it by heart now, because I knew that I was not crazy. I knew that something had happened, that I was literally touched by God. This is what I felt, you know, and that was my spiritual awakening. And so against doctor's orders, I left, and I immediately began going to meetings. I shared how I felt, like we do that all the time. And from that day on, my life has totally changed. I used to be depressed, you know, even without medication in Alcoholics Anonymous. I still was depressed, but from then on, I just was a different person because God had forgiven me and just something happened, you know. So since then, I'm like the way you see me, and then life goes on and people come and people go, and I always say, you know, I stay sober no matter what. I have boyfriends come and boyfriends go, I stay sober. Jobs come, jobs go, I stay sober. You know, I'm not crazy about dogs. I had two dogs who died when they were like 12, 13, 14. I stay sober, you know. So here you find me today, just the way I am. And, you know, every day is truly a miracle. So if you are new, stay. Don't leave before the miracle. Oh, but before they took me to the hospital, I forgot to tell you this. Why John took me to the priest was because I said, John, I don't think I can go on anymore. What do you mean? He says, this AA stuff, what is all this about? I knew I had to do another fourth and fifth step, you know, and I was unwilling to do that. What I wanted to do instead was kill myself. So John, 8 years longer sober than me, so that that time if I'm have four and a half, he's like 11 and a half years sober. He's a very smart guy. He says, oh, you want to kill yourself? Sounds like a good idea to me. I said, what do you mean? Well, I want to see this. I said, okay. Then he says, well, how are you going to do this? I had not thought about this. And so I thought, oh, there's the George Washington Bridge, which is a huge, big, you know, it connects New Jersey with New York. I said, I'm going to jump off the George Washington Bridge, because many people had done that. He says, okay, sounds good. How are you going to get there? Do you want to take your car or my car? And I had to think. And I said, well, we can take my car. Okay, are you going to drive or am I going to drive? And I said, well, you can drive. So I live downtown in Manhattan. I live in Greenwich Village, and this bridge was maybe like 10, 15 miles up on the island. So we drive up there. It's a beautiful, beautiful spring day, just like today. And we get out of the car. I said, "You still want to kill yourself?" I said, "Absolutely." So okay. I said, "John, you can go now. I'm here. I want to see this." I said, "I can't get rid of this guy." So I decided to walk up to the bridge. And then I said, "Okay, I'm here. Leave." He said, "No, I'm not going to leave you until I see this." And he insisted that he'd stay. And then he also wanted me to make up my mind if it's going to be on the New Jersey side or on the Manhattan side. Well, let me tell you, I could not make up my mind. He did not want to leave. And so we were there maybe 10:30 in the morning. We walked back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, till it is 2:30 in the afternoon. And I just was getting more tired and more tired, and he just was hanging on, and he was not going to leave me. And then he said finally, "Well, aren't you getting a little tired?" And I was. And that is when we went to see the priest. But he really saved my life, you know, because he knew that I was worth saving, I guess, you know. So in sobriety, there are these dips, things do happen, but we just don't drink, you know. And I was able to return this to a friend of mine who also wanted to die. And so we walked from my house all the way to, there was a concert. I think one of my teachers was giving a concert, and we went over there and we walked, and it was a 3-hour walk. And after the concert, I said, "Hey, you still want to kill yourself?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Okay, I'm not going to leave you." And so we walked all the way home. And now he's still sober, like 15 years later. So this is how we help each other. It doesn't matter what goes on, we help each other, you know. And so here I am. And It's a miraculous journey, I can tell you. It's beyond my wildest dreams, and it's not about cash and prices or anything. It's about being able to be in the present, in the now. You know, I'm a living amend to my family. I'm the youngest of a whole bunch of them, and the oldest one is 90, in very good health. I, by God's grace, am so healthy. My doctor doesn't know as to how come you don't take any medication. He said, "What is your secret? You know, you're an anomaly. You don't take any flu shots or anything." I said, "Doctor, it's prayer and meditation. It works." And he just cannot believe it, you know. I have one little thing more, just a few more minutes, because I know you guys want to dance. But my father was a spiritual healer. You never want to be like your parents, but I am in the healing profession in the sense that I have been teaching for 18 years at NYU Medical Alternative Therapies. And so in February, I often go to Brazil when it's very cold. So went to Brazil and I saw John of God, who is a spiritual healer. And I saw another guy by the name of Valentin. And, you know, like, we believe in miracles. Who ever thought that doctors don't believe that we can stop drinking from one day to the next? That's a miracle, right? Really, truly. So there's another miracle that I can share with you, because I have severe arthritis in my feet and in my knees, and I had to take Motrin or paracetamol. And so, because sometimes I cannot walk. So I went to see John of God, fine. And I also saw Valentin. And Valentin is a healer who is not known as well, but he works with imaginary scissors. And when you are in front of him, he says, "What's ailing you?" And I show him, he wants to see it. I show him my knees and my feet. And with these imaginary scissors, he goes snip, 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 snip. And then he, because of course it's all in your mind, right? So snip, snip, and then it's in the heart, because all illness is spiritual, I've been heard. So he goes like snip, snip, and then I began laughing, and I was so happy. This was in February, from February on, I've had absolutely no pain, hardly any paracetamol, maybe like one or two, which is like unbelievable, you know? So miracles do happen, you know, 75 years old. I think I'll stay another day sober, right? And so I went to visit my older sister, who's 93 years old. And there's hope for me. She has a boyfriend who's 93. And they're living in sin. And they're very, very happy. And they had this big, huge party, not for my birthday, but for the ex-officers club, many officers from the NATO and whatnot. And there was a general and some other people. And they were ever so kind. And my sister said how much they loved me. And I said, why? I said, because you offered to clean up. I came with a big bag after they had the barbecue over. And I went to each table and I said, can I get your plastic things and put them in here? And it's simply because you guys taught me this. Participate, help out. And so, you know, everything that I am and that I know is really, I've learned it here. You gave me back all these old teachings from my parents that I rejected so much. Can you imagine? So now when I have resentment, I pray for you and for me sometimes. And so I am on, I'll be going to visit the rest of my family. They're not in very good health. As a matter of fact, tonight, my brother in Amsterdam, he has been ailing for a long time, the family is gathering to find out the exact date and time when they're going to have the euthanasia. He's 84 years old. And although that's happening in my life, I can still be happy, joyous, and free with you because I'm right here with you. Yeah? But I know I have to do that on Monday. And then I will be off to Friesland where I have two siblings who are also very sick. One is has a kidney disease, and every other day she has to go on dialysis, and she's at the end, it might be a few months. And then one of my sisters has dementia who does not recognize me anymore. And it's all part of life. I've had many friends in the program who are not with us anymore, and they are not here. And so what I do is I invite new people in my life, because otherwise, I'll be this eccentric little old lady in Greenwich Village with her little dog, and I am not. I have all these young fellas and young girls, and people wonder, who do you know, and how come they hang out in front of your house or on the roof, and they hug, and you get so many hugs and kisses? It's because I am sober. So I still go to these meetings because I love to get my hugs and kisses, and I'm now the age I can now flirt with men, women, or whoever from 15 years to 100. And so from a woman who was so angry and hated everybody, I have so changed, and now I can tell you with my full and with my full heart and with my real feelings how much I love you for my sobriety. Thank you.